Welcome to the Evolution of Medicine podcast, the place health professionals come to hear from innovators and agitators leading the charge. We cover the latest clinical breakthroughs in health technology, as well as practical tools to help transform your practice and the health of your community. Now here's your host, James Maskell.
Hello and welcome back to the Evolution of Medicine podcast and a new series that we are starting this week called Leaders of the New School, and that's new with a K. And you'll find out exactly why the K is so important as we move along. We are interviewing powerful female physicians leading the charge towards a new medical system. And our first interview is with Dr. Kelly Brogan. She's been a fan favorite on the Functional Forum and the Evolution of Medicine Summit. And today we talked about a number of things with regard to her journey from conventional medicine and psychiatry into integrative medicine. We talked about intuition. We talked about the power of predictive medicine. And we talked about a number of other things that hopefully will set up this series very well. It was a great half an hour. I'd love to hear your feedback. Enjoy. A warm welcome to the podcast, Dr. Kelly Brogan. Welcome, Doc.
Psyched to be here.
You have been a regular guest on our summits and the Functional Forum, but I think this might be the first podcast appearance.
It's true. Just spanning the media gamut. I'm happy to be here.
We are talking about, this is the beginning of a new series that we're doing called The Leaders of the New School. And it's really to shine a light on those female physicians that are taking us through to this new paradigm in medicine. And, I've been affected, I would say, to a certain degree by your writing and particularly your thoughts on femininity and medicine. So let's just start with, sort of where these ideas came from your perspective and how you see that, how the feminine ideas fitting into the overall movement of what's happening in medicine.
Yeah. So as is typically the case, there are parallel processes, right? So there's my personal experience, which seems to very profoundly mirror what is going on in the more meta view of things. So I am a self-described feminist, have always conceived of myself as one. When I was growing up, I was, felt very entitled to long-term, access to birth control. I got to medical school and couldn't be more excited about the emergence of the Gardasil HPV vaccine. I was very interested in the rights that women had to access conventional pharmaceutical products for their own, health empowerment. And this is how I conceived of it. And my feminism manifested as I started a family because I really had this sort of, I'll do it my way, thanks, kind of an attitude. And, didn't really want to listen to what anyone else had to tell me about anything. So I really began to do my own research at that point during my first pregnancy. And because of that, I went on to choose to have a natural birth, not because I was interested in some, mystical, cosmic experience or transformational, window into my own feminine embodiment, but because I did the research and understood that that was actually the healthiest thing for my baby, according to the science. So that experience is what ushered me into a very different type of thinking. And I think many women can attest to this, right? That there is a different type of, sort of planning and preparing and considering that you do when you're in the space of mothering than you've ever done when you've tried to master any other tasks in your life. And that was sort of my entry point into discovering my intuition. Because up until that point in time, I'd really only operated from the space of my mind and the space of my intellect. And now, of course, retrospectively, I understand this to be a very masculine, quote unquote, energy, right? So it's a very results-oriented, outcomes-focused, achievement-inclined, sort of very linear, causal type of mentation. And I was a very aggressive personality. I, type A by any description. And it wasn't really until I entered the space of motherhood and began to struggle with all of the things that I could never know with my mind, right? You're a parent, you know that there are, tens of thousands of things in any given year that you can't quite get a clear answer for. And so you need to tap into something else. And of course, at around this same time, I began to lose some faith in medicine that I had invested you know, religious level commitment to in terms of my faith in science-based medicine. And it was shaken and it began to be sort of poked at from multiple different angles. I came across, you know, books that began to undermine my belief in the science of psychiatry that I had quote unquote mastered up until that point. I began to question some of the more, you know, sort of fundamental elements of medicine around, you know, germ theory and the importance of suppressing and managing symptoms. And so really it's all sort of blended together into a seamless process that has brought me to quite a beautiful place. And I'm sure we can elaborate on it, but I always think about that Bucky Fuller quote that you popularized, James, because I think that part of the process of embodying the feminine, right, of embodying and upholding a deep sense of knowing, of recognizing the power of intuition over intellect, a part of that process is not fighting, right? A part of that process is not warring against what we don't like about the current system. And it's a critical component because we're really here to celebrate what comes from this space. And what comes from this space is a deep connectedness, you know, to each other, to community, to nature, and even to ourselves. And, you know, at the risk of getting metaphysical, to even our own souls. It's quite a profound transformation. And I certainly have been on the other side. So I know what it feels like to be in the war zone, right? In the antis, in the antidepressants, in the, you know, antibiotics and the antihypertensives, in the anti position, you know, us versus them, us versus our body, us versus nature. I've absolutely been in that mentality and I understand what's alluring about it, but it's really time to move into a different space. And I couldn't be more excited to, you know, be a part of this type of effort to gather these voices together.
Yeah, absolutely. And just so you know where my thinking process went last year, and maybe you can sort of identify with this. The first thing was really, you know, coming across the idea of the second summit and really realizing that one, you know, we talked about the evolution of medicine in 2014. And then I really come to an understanding that what we need, the type of medicine that we have, the patriarchal domination of the patient, domination of diseases, et cetera, you know, and then this other new form of medicine were not things that one could just evolve very easily into another. And in fact, a lot of the things were completely opposite. There was an opposite. And so what we did, the second summit called Healthcare from Scratch, really looking at those opposites. And then I had a further experience of going to Burning Man about a week before this summit kicked off, when it was all recorded and in the can, but we had that event in New York where I spoke about it, where I really saw that, you know, that the kind of society that Burning Man is looking to create, this sort of temporary community that is created there, is really a feminine kind of community. It talks about community and empowerment and gifting and social support and radical self-reliance and all these kind of things that, you know, really gave me another look of thinking differently about what is this man that's burning? Is it a man? Is it the guy who, you know, employs you? Or is it sort of an awakening of this, you know, this energy? And when I look at functional and integrated medicine, what I see is that it's a lot more aligned with some of those feminine ideals. And it sounds like that's some of the conclusion that you came to through your own research, your own health, your own family, and so forth.
100%, right? Because sort of if you want to talk old paradigm, new paradigm, the old paradigm is a Cartesian paradigm, right? So it's sort of in this very long shadow that Descartes has cast, where we think about, you know, the body as comprised of separate parts, but principally the mind as being separate from the body, right? And not having a physical sort of correlate. And we've had science actually for, you know, a good 20 years at least. And I've actually recently taken a deep dive into Dr. Candace Pert's work, a female bench scientist who's arguably largely responsible for the creation of the field of psychoneuroendocrinology or psychoneuroimmunology, as it's more commonly called. And what she discovered was that, in fact, the mind is the body. It is the body, right? So she was responsible for understanding the role of neuropeptides, so these amino acid strings that literally encode emotion and travel throughout the body to different organs and glands. So, you know, between work like that And of course, then the dawning of the microbiome, where we understand that the outside is the inside, and that we are comprised of the very things we thought that we were positioned against. These types of scientific, really, discoveries, what they do is they decimate these false boundaries. So no longer are we made of component parts. No longer do we have a mind separate from our body. No longer is it, you know, purposeless, inanimate objects and non-sentient nature out there and us human beings and our experience in here. So all of these false divisions are really, really being challenged if you follow the literature and you're sort of up on the most modern, you know, claims, you know, that science is putting forth. And so what comes with that is a fundamentally different way of looking at nonlinear systems. And this used to be relegated to sort of, you know, the realm of quackery, and maybe Bruce Lipton was like the only one who was attempting to legitimize this space. But now it's actually the only credible, in my opinion, way to conceptualize human biology as part of a dynamic whole. And of course, the, you know, non-incidental poetry in that is that we are ourselves best off if we think about each other as being fundamentally connected and ourselves as being fundamentally connected to nature. So it's this idea that what's good for you is good for me, is good for the planet, that these, all of these things have the same goal, and that we're sort of reaching the breaking point of, or at least a point of diminishing returns, of thinking that there is a solution that technology, in the way we've been applying it, can offer us to the problems it has created, right? So this dominant paradigm where we seek to commandeer nature and we seek to manage our bodies into submission. I think many, many people are starting to feel, you know, sort of the bankruptcy of that. They're starting to feel that the promises of medicine and technology are not going to be delivered. And so we're looking for something different. And I am so excited by the sense I have that people are waking up at a really accelerated rate. You know, I see patients all the time who are otherwise pretty, you know, traditionally oriented, conventionally minded folks who are just looking at the medical system and saying, you know what? This is not working for me. And, you know, thankfully, you know, the democratization of information through the internet offers everyone exposure to a different type of thinking. And I think that's, you know, certainly something you're obviously very responsible for.
Well, thank you for saying that. Partially responsible for, should we say. You know, I the word new has really stuck with me recently because I feel like obviously this is the new medicine in the way that, you know, we need this medicine to keep the population healthy and no one really knows what's going on with chronic disease and no one's really been able to get a handle on it. So this medicine that you're practicing and a lot of your colleagues are practicing is new in that sense of the word. But when I started really to think about the ideas of what is new about it, this knowing kept on coming back to me. Like, wouldn't it be amazing if you could know, you know, we did a webinar a few weeks ago on predictive autoimmunity, right? So, you know, you might know ahead of time that you had certain antibodies that were going to predispose you to getting certain autoimmune diseases, or you, if you knew other people with that disease, you could actually help yourself to get well. Think about the group visits. And then There was sort of like an intuitive part of medicine, an intuitive thing for patients to say, I'm sort of intuiting that this is not really the right way to be going about my health. And then also for doctors to be, you know, having an intuitive hit that this isn't the type of medicine that I thought I was going to be practicing. And it all came to this idea of intuition and a knowing. And so I like the word new with a K to talk about this, you know, leaders of the new school. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, when you first mentioned that to me, I had that internal hit, you know, that I just resonate with it so deeply. And this is really the core of what I have discovered as sort of what I'm here for, you know. And I think that I feel so passionately about this idea, particularly with women who arguably have access to, even from an evolutionary perspective, quite a deep sense of knowing and quite a powerful intuition. And in fact, I think it was Candace Pert, who argued that women are the ambassadors for this type of, you know, intuitive living, maybe even because we have thicker corpus callosum, right? So that tissue that connects the two sides of the brain that allows women to inhabit both a rational and an intuitive space with ease and facility moving between the two. So I thought that was kind of a cool tidbit. But of course, as potential mothers, or even if we never actualize as mothers, we have this inborn sense. And I love the analogy, you know, I have a massive crush on Alan Watts and, you know, the British philosopher, and he uses this analogy to describe the difference between mind-based operation and intuition-based operation. And he talks about, you know, if you have a heron, right, a bird that's on the edge of a lake and it's looking for a fish, you know, you can imagine this heron sort of like darting around, trying to like cover every single little part of the space in front of it with its eyeballs, like frantically throwing its head around everywhere, trying to look and look and look and look and look. And then you can imagine it sort of sitting back gracefully and taking in the entire landscape with this sort of meta vision, still and calm. And you can imagine that when there's a ripple on the water in the distance, it will be so poised to channel all of its energy in the direction of that ripple, unlike if it's darting around, you know, like an idiot all over the place. So that calm sensibility is intuitive action. And we really are arguably some of the only animals in human history to have allowed intellect to co-opt those instincts to the point where we are actually, we've actually endangered ourselves and potentially even the forward progress of our species. And it's time for a correction. And I think that's, you know, sort of what is coming up. And in fact, there's author who wrote in the 70s a book called The Continuum Concept. I just wrote an article about this, so it's fresh on my mind. And I love that phrase, the continuum concept, because what it applies to is that over several million years of evolutionary history, our bodies and minds have come to expect a certain set of exposures, right? A certain type of experience. And it's really only arguably the past maybe even 150 years, but certainly no longer than the past several thousand, that we have largely deviated from what indigenous folks have been doing and continue to do in certain pockets of the world, you know, for those millions of years. And so now what happens when a baby is born, you know, surgically in a hospital, fed formula, vaccinated, thrown a bunch of antibiotics, put in a quiet crib down the hall by itself to cry it out, living in an environment full of industrial chemicals and fluoridated water and all the rest of this cataclysmic nightmare, you know, when you put that experience up against the continuum expectation that that baby had, you understand why the body is constantly seeking what it's missing. And part of that continuum concept is this little voice inside that something just ain't right. Right? Like it's a little feeling most of us carry around that something is just off, like we're missing something, we're longing for something, we're wanting something that we just don't have. And I think many of us, when we learn about indigenous, you know, tribes in South America or Africa, for example, we sort of have this sense that they have a life experience that may seem difficult, you know, relative to our hot showers and sewer systems, but that there's something almost like magical that we have no access to, that they get to, you know, sort of indulge in every day. And we, of course, know now through scientific exploration that they enjoy a state of health and freedom from chronic disease that we couldn't even fantasize about. So that correction, that sort of growing voice inside, is really deeply programmed. So this isn't like New Age mysticism. This is some old stuff and that's beginning to rear its head. And it's an old kind of knowing. So that's why I love, you know, what's happening in science today and all of the literature that I follow. It's so profound that it really just echoes this ancient wisdom. It's like science is finally catching up or attempting to catch up with the validation of what people have known through their own evolutionary wisdom for literally millions of years. So it's very cool in that sense.
You know, yeah, one of the things that pops to mind when you talk about that is complexity and how, you know, when we had very easy to ascertain cause and effect, it was very easy to do, you know, scientific-based medicine. But when you get into these more chronic diseases where you have sort of an infinite web of complexity, that you do need other tools to be able to sort of pick apart what's going on. What are the tools that you've sort of gained from into your toolbox since your, you know, shift into this type of medicine that have allowed you to get better results with people more quickly?
Yeah. So that's profound, because I definitely have a trained mind, right, that is looking for linear cause and effect. I took a deep dive into researching supplements because I wanted to know what was the supplement that was going to move the needle the most for my patients who came in with chronic fatigue or depression or panic attacks or autoimmunity or whatever it might be. And I really wanted to match up, you know, one type of intervention to one, you know, presenting pathology. And when I began to try and figure out what was the diet I was going to use in my practice, I began to start to research some of the profound, you know, elements of nutrition as information, right? As food, as information, and as an epigenetic modulator. And part of what that did, of course, was force me to totally abandon metrics like, of course, calories, obviously, but even macro and micronutrients, like to talk about food in terms of vitamins and minerals, fats and carbs and protein, started to, you know, sort of fall flat also. So when you begin to bump up against the limitations of, you know, what science can offer us in terms of quantification of the very, like you said, complex and multimodal effects of these lifestyle interventions, you have to just throw up your hands. The only appropriate posture for somebody practicing holistic medicine is a humble one, right? Because when you've reached the limits, and that's why so many, you know, not to put myself in this category, but that's why so many of the great geniuses of history have been like quite spiritual people, right? Like even religious in orientation. And, you know, Nick Gonzalez, who I had the privilege of being mentored by for a brief but very profound window in my life, you know, is a deeply spiritual man and one of the most learned medical scholars I've ever known. So these things come together because there really isn't another way to fully acknowledge the power of these simple interventions scientifically. We can only get so far understanding even about the, for example, the neurohermetics of certain vegetables, for example. You know, there's some beautiful science out there, but it still falls flat. And so what it really served to push me in the direction of is keeping it very simple and holding a space for that simplicity with my patients. So, you know, using food and more intuitive eating as the primary and singular intervention, then layering in other lifestyle interventions that we all know have effects we have no idea how to quantify. You know, I love Candace Pert's work, for example, and I love the science of meditation and yoga. But the truth is, you know, an enduring health intervention, if you want to look at it that way, you know, of let's say yoga and breath work that has been around for at least 7 to 10,000, if not more years, you know, there's a reason it endures. I don't think we're going to be popping Prozac and doing triple bypass surgeries in 7,000 years from now, right? So there's a reason that these technologies have endured, and it's because they work in ways we can only attempt to explain. So I really, you know, try to hold the space of food, movement, and meditation as primary interventions for my patients. And then I use supplements very in a sort of like tertiary, if not even more demoted way. And a lot of it is restructuring beliefs and mindset and working to shift fears. And that's really been a lot of what I've begun to do with patients. And it's really like an alchemy. It's so much more of an art form than I'd like it to be, because I'd like it to be very, very largely reproducible. And I think these basic elements are, but I think to be able to reproduce the effects, at least that I get in clinical practice, you have to passionately believe in this, and you have to really awaken to the beauty of these very simple interventions, and trust that every single person already has inside them what they need to transform. And so, right. So like I saw a woman this morning, and cut me off anytime because I'm rambling, but I saw a woman this morning, you know, who's struggling with like very intractable insomnia, and she's really at her wit's end and hopeless and all the rest of it. And it's because of psychiatric medication withdrawal, which is the worst kind of insomnia, of course. And really what I was attempting to convey to her was your sleep is something we can handle. We're going to get you sleeping again. But I'm not just interested in resolving this symptom. Like, I'm interested in what is your next chapter going to look like? What kind of a different story are you going to sign on to? Because you've just hit menopause. You're in another potential phase. Or are you just going to just keep on trucking, you know, worrying about tomorrow, next week, and next month? Because I'm very interested in the opportunity that this type of medicine presents for real radical transformation in thinking, because we need to go there. We need to go there together. And I think people are more ready than they've ever been maybe in the past 100 years.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think there's definitely a readiness for it. So I guess, you know, you've been someone not to stand on the sidelines, but to get involved in, you know, getting involved with the conversation. And I'm really looking forward to your book coming out next month, A Mind of Your Own, and being able to, you know, have a bigger platform again to be able to, you know, shout these ideas from the rooftops. But I know that your idea of like what it's going to take us to get to where we're trying to get to has changed as well, maybe in the last year or so, as far as like what's necessary for health providers now to take us to this new medicine. And I'd love to get your ongoing thoughts on that, because I know that's been a shift for you too.
Well, I think there are probably many answers to that question, but I think one that I think you would agree with is community, communication, and connection. Because, you know, I love, as you do, networking. I love, you know, connecting to other edge walkers and, you know, sort of change makers. And I think it's profound how many more of us are out there than we think. I think it's almost fundamental to the experience of, you know, sort of radical thinking or departure from the norm or, you know, sort of abandoning conventional living to feel isolated and alone. And then, of course, you're in your old, you know, little pod of your family and your friends who think you're crazy and who think you're, you know, going through a phase that hopefully you'll snap out of when you really have come upon something that feels so true to you. It's almost like you've remembered it from some time you've spent in forgetting. And so holding this space, I think, is all we have to do. I love that expression, wherever and whomever told it to me in the past couple of years, it's the most powerful phrase I've come across, because I'm very action-oriented and I want to get things done and I want to change the game and the conversation. And that's all, you know, well and good. But the truth is, change comes from holding a new energy. And that's all we have to do. All you have to do as a doctor or a patient is do what feels true to you and just do it every day. Wake up and do it again, and wake up and do it again. And that's it. That and in and of itself has, you know, a butterfly effect that is really undeniable. And I think that's what's going on, is that all of these little individual pixels, you know, of people around the world are waking up to this truth, right? Are being pulled back to the continuum by that voice inside. And they're just waking up and doing their own thing. And that in and of itself is very powerful. But what amplifies that power, of course, is to recognize that there are many, many, many thousands, if not millions of people who are doing this simultaneously. And then I think we'll create, you know, sort of like an energy that will really, without much effort, create, you know, irreparable chinks in the armor of the current paradigm. And so that's why I don't think it's so much about, you know, being right, about fighting, about taking down the system, about the, you know, these idiots who are, you know, practicing stupid medicine and killing people and harming everyone. It doesn't need to be about that. It took me years to get to this place. So I understand that this may not be resonant for some people who are really feeling the frustration and even rage of having been duped for many years and maybe even harmed seriously by conventional medicine. So I've been there. But I think the beauty is that there are so many of us for whom this is beginning to make sense and feel resonant, and where these simple changes to lifestyle and these simple commitments to a different way of thinking, you know, can spare you dozens of specialists and years of multiple layers of medications and feeling unempowered and dismissed and all of the fear that comes with that type of engagement with healthcare. You know, there's really something beautiful about the simplicity of this model and of all of us doing it together. I mean, you and I talk all the time about how much people who practice holistic or functional or whatever, alternative medicine, my favorite term, love their jobs. I mean, we love our jobs. It's such an exhilarating and invigorating sense of connectedness to purpose. Why is it, you know, that we love our jobs? Is it because, you know, we're making millions of dollars? Probably not. Is it because, you know, we vacation, you know, 6 days a week? Probably not. We work pretty hard. But there's a connection to something primal, really, that you engage when you practice environmental medicine or, you know, sort of nature-oriented medicine that is totally absent in the conventional models where doctors are, you know, burnt out, feeling disenfranchised, and feeling, you know, bereft. So I don't know if
well, look, the best it does it answers the question perfectly. And look, we don't need to mess around with these names anymore. You know, one of the things that really resonated at the beginning of the Functional Forum for People was this idea of root cause resolution medicine to replace all of these insane words that don't really mean anything. Not only don't mean anything to doctors, or, you know, most doctors would look at them like holistic, integrative, functional, whatever. It doesn't mean anything, not only to the general, to the doctors, but to the general public.
Totally.
That's why I'm passionate about finding a right word and a new word. And to me, this is the new medicine. And when you say new medicine to people, people resonate with it. They don't even know that you're talking about having a K at the beginning, but they understand that there's a new way to do things. But when you really understand the simplicity of that K, is that this is intuitive, this is collaborative, this is empathy focused. And I salute you and all the other, you know, doctors that we're going to speak to on this series for being a source of that, you know, coming into the world. And I think that there's an agreement amongst, you know, the people that are doing this, that we're all playing our role, and that together we're going to cause the kind of change that you're talking about. And I'm very proud to be, you know, one part of that, but also to shine a light on those people who are, you know, taking a step forward, because I know that your career has, you know, has inspired others to make a similar journey. And look, we're just getting started. Your book hasn't even come out yet. You haven't even been on Dr. Oz yet.
God help us.
It's going to be a great ride. And I really appreciate you coming to sort of lay the foundation of this series. Throughout this series, we're going to be speaking to leaders of the new school. We're going to be speaking to female physicians who have been building this paradigm within their own practice, within their own teaching, having big impact on the world already, and are now coming together to, you know, start to, you know, to take on these bigger challenges. But thanks so much for being here and being part of our community, Kelly, and being on the podcast.
Thank you. And listen, thank you for holding the space. It's exactly what I'm talking about. We all appreciate it. Thanks, James.
Awesome. Well, this has been The Leaders of the New School. It's a new podcast series from the Evolution of Medicine. Each week, we are talking to female physicians leading the charge towards a new era of medicine. This has been Dr. Kelly Brogan. Check out and pre-order her book, A Mind of Your Own, anywhere that you buy books. And she'll be on the Functional Forum on the 29th of February, along with Dr. Jeffrey Bland. We'll see you next time. From me, your host, James Maskell, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to The Evolution of Medicine. If you enjoyed this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Plus, consider giving us a 5-star rating in iTunes and telling your colleagues. If you want to be part of our movement to evolve medicine, go to goevomed.com, where you can download our simple prescription for a thriving practice. Until next time, thanks for your support, and keep building healthier communities every day. Remember, to change everything, we need everyone.